Welcome back to The Killers. This is Savannah Grasher.
And this is Alex Prince, and we're here to darken your day. Today's episode is about the killer clown that prowled Chicago.
His real name was John Wayne Gacy, and with this killer comes a past filled with abuse, negligence, and troublesome behavior. He was born March 17th, 1942, and his life was hard from the start. He lived in a home with his father, mother, and two sisters. He got along with his mother and sisters, but his father regularly abused him mentally, verbally, and physically.
His father constantly belittled him and whipped him with belts and razor straps. Despite his father's constant abuse, he never fought back. When he was around 7, he was also molested by a family friend and never came out about it because he feared about being blamed for it, and in the same year was caught participating in a sexual act with his friend and a young girl, which his father also beat him for.
He was also an ill child. He had a heart condition, appendicitis, and strange blackout and seizure episodes that could not be diagnosed. He claimed to have been hospitalized for about a year between the ages of 14 and 18 because of the seizures, which could not be explained.
Later, when he was around 18, he left home for Las Vegas, Nevada, where he got a job working in ambulance services until he transferred to Palm Mortuary, where he worked for 3 months before returning home to Chicago, but not before he decided to slip into the coffin of a deceased teenage male one evening in the embalming room, where he caressed and embraced the body, claiming he felt a sense of shock while doing it.
When he returned home, the day after he actually decided to lay down with that body, he enrolled in the Northwestern Business College and graduated in 1963, even though he never graduated high school. After that, he started working at a shoe business and was eventually transferred to Springfield to be a salesman in 1964. He joined the local JCs and became a key member in their organization. In the same year, he joined a colleague in the JCs, got him intoxicated so that he could perform a sexual act on Gacy. And when he was still working at the shoe company in Springfield, he met his future wife, Marilyn Myers, who was a co-worker. And after they got married, Marilyn's father bought 3 Kentucky Fried Chicken businesses in Waterloo, Iowa, for Gacy to manage and gave them an old family house that was in Waterloo.
After Gacy had moved to Waterloo, he had 2 children with Marilyn, one of whom was named Michael and the other Christine. Respectively, they were born early 1966 and 1967. Their birth seemed to earn the approval of Gacy's father, and he even received an apology for abusing him after all those years. From then on, he spent a lot more of his time in the local JC's club, but there proved to be a darker side to the Waterloo JC's, involving wife swapping, drug use, pornography, and prostitution. He cheated on his wife with prostitutes during this time in the JC's and said to have a club in his basement where he allowed employees of his KFC to hang out. He seemed to only socialize with the young male employees and would get them drunk and attempt to make sexual advances towards them, and if they rejected them, he would just claim that it was a test of their morals or just a joke. But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it wasn't, because in 1967 he committed his first known sexual assault on the teenage son of a fellow JC, actually, which he was convicted of sodomy for, but not before he tried to shut the kid up by hiring a co-worker to beat the kid up by spraying some mace in his face and just screaming at him and telling him that he shouldn't take him to court. He also assaulted his employees and other boys that he lured into his house with things they found desirable, such as porn or drugs or just anything they wanted.
He did plead guilty to the sodomy charge, but not to any of the others. Once he was convicted, Gacy was sent to jail for 10 years, but was able to get out on parole after just 2. In the divorce, the wife wanted custody over the children and possessions of all the property. The court ruled in her favor, actually, and he never saw her or the children ever again. While still in prison on Christmas Day, Gacy's father actually died of cirrhosis of the liver. Gacy, however, was denied compassionate leave and was extremely upset, known to be flailing on the ground and crying.
Once he was released from prison, he relocated back to Des Plaines, Illinois, which was actually ordered by the court, and which was basically just outside of Chicago, to live with his mother, which I guess would somehow regulate him. Curiously enough, the next year he was arrested again when another boy accused him of sexual assault, but the case was dropped when the boy didn't show up for court. They didn't know why he didn't show up for court. He later bought his own house and became engaged with Carol Hoff. He dated her in high school, and she was a divorcee with 2 daughters. And the week before their wedding, Gacy was arrested for battery and reckless conduct because a young male complained that Gacy lured him into Gacy's car by impersonating a police officer and forcing him to perform a sexual act with Gacy. But, once again, the charges were later dropped. He also started his own construction business around this time, PDM Contractors, which stands for Painting, Decorating, and Maintenance. He also joined a local clown club and performed as Pogo the Clown at many events.
What kind of events was he doing?
Well, he went to a few children's hospitals and birthdays and like kind of typical clown events. And in 1976, after much disagreement between Gacy and his wife about how he was spending a lot of time with teenage boys in his garage, possessing gay porn, and possessing other men's wallets and identification, Carol and Gacy divorced by mutual consent.
This odd behavior eventually led Gacy to commit many murders in the 70s. He would do this by picking them up from arcades or bus stops if they were runaways. And the van that he would pick kids up in was actually from that contracting business that he had. His first victim, Timothy McCoy, was a 16-year-old that was picked up from the Greyhound station. After he had killed McCoy, he buried him in the crawl space and eventually covered his body in concrete. After Gacy's second murder, it was found that he stuffed cloth rags or their own underwear down the mouth to keep their bodily liquids from leaking out.
Gacy chillingly referred to the mid-70s as his cruising years in reference to when he committed most of his murders, which is between the years of 1976 and 1978. While he was running his construction business, which was also in the mid-70s, he would try to prey on young men that worked at his business and succeeded many times. He killed one of his workers because the worker went to Gacy's house to dispute a paycheck that Gacy hadn't paid him, and it was a large balance, and Gacy got him drunk, handcuffed him, strangled him, and buried him under his garage. Gacy often got many men drunk, convinced them to pawn handcuffs, and proceeded to torture and rape them until he would use a rope to make a makeshift tourniquet to put around their neck and strangle them to death. And he called these the handcuff trick and the rope trick, and I guess he called them tricks because he's a clown and each clown has their own special tricks, or that's what he said.
That's really dark.
And remember how Gacy's wife Carol decided to divorce him in 1976 because of an argument about his construction business? It was after that divorce that the neighbors claimed they noticed erratic changes in his behavior, including lights on at strange hours in the morning, or his car leaving super early in the morning or super late at night, and having young guys coming and going to his house. One neighbor even claimed that she and her son had been awoken many times early in the morning or late at night by those sounds of muffled crying, screaming, and shouting, which they said came from Gacy's house.
The police were actually tipped off of Gacy roaming the neighborhood in his van trying to pick up young boys, so they set a watch on his house in 1976. Although the original stakeout on Gacy's house proved to be inconclusive, there was a watch that remained over the house for quite some time. And soon after, once a child by the name of Robert Peast went missing, Gacy was once again the prime suspect.
And he was the prime suspect for a good reason. He visited the pharmacy where Peast worked, and Gacy offered him a job. And the next day, he went missing after talking to Gacy, and when the police looked into Gacy's history, they noticed, oh, this guy has a history with taking young boys and forcing them to do many actions, and they just disappear after. How strange, we should look into him. And so they were looking into him, and all the surveillance was making Gacy really stressed out, so he went to his lawyer's office and got really drunk and admitted to 30 of his murders. And after that, he knew he was going to be arrested, so he went to a gas station and said goodbye to someone before he was going to leave. And he actually gave a gas attendant at the pump some cannabis, which would come back to bite him later. But before that happened, he started driving different places and saying goodbye to different people, and everyone was really weird about it, and he like even admitted some of the murders, and it freaked a lot of people out. And when he was driving, the surveillance officers followed him the entire time. They said that he was seen to be praying and had a rosary that he was holding up and praying and crying, and they thought that his actions were becoming very erratic and strange, and they thought that he was about to commit suicide, so they decided to arrest him on charges of cannabis that they saw him giving to the kid at the gas station so that they could take him to custody before he did anything that would harm himself.
After Gacy was arrested for the marijuana charges, they obtained a search warrant to search his house for more marijuana, when in reality, they were searching for the young boy Robert Peast who had went missing. And as soon as the officers stepped into the house, they immediately got a hit of this odor that smelled of decaying bodies.
And didn't his mom and sister, whenever they lived with him for a very short period of time, also say they noticed a smell?
Yes, Gacy seemed to cover that up by saying that it was simply sewer gas, when in fact he was going in the crawl space and pouring lime all over the bodies to cover the smell.
When they went to search his crawl space for Peast's body, they didn't just find his body. They didn't actually find his at all, because his was dumped in a river with four other bodies. It was the Des Plaines River, which was the river in Gacy's town, which he lived in. Then 29 bodies were found in the crawl space under concrete, and some had lime on them and had decayed faster because of the lime, and a lot of them were buried together as if they were killed at the same time. And he was convicted of 33 murders in all, and they said that he could have killed up to 45 boys, but they couldn't prove anything. They actually found a Peast in the river, tangled up in some roots of trees at the edge of a bank.
After Gacy was convicted of those 33 murders, he was sentenced to death by lethal injection. Before he died, though, Gacy painted many paintings depicting numerous things, such as other clowns or famous musicians and artists. these paintings were actually sold to the victims' families so that they could hold this giant bonfire and burn all of his paintings. In an effort to name some of the unknown children, new DNA research has proven to be efficient by naming two more of the 8 unknown victims, narrowing it down to only 6 who are still unknown. This is Alex.
This is Savannah.
And this has been the Killers Podcast. We've hoped this episode darkened your day, and thank you for listening to this episode.
Yeah, thanks.